An Overlander's Journal, adapted from an original diary by an unknown traveler with original spelling. Fort Garry, June 1862. All on foot, as usual, at an early hour, struck tents and piled up our stakes and started up the Assiniboine River in a western direction. There was many an eye filled with a tear that flowed from a full heart, as that was the last of civilization until we should cross the mountains. And that was 1,300 miles before us. We passed some splendid farms, reminding me of the valley of old Chateauguay, the many happy hours that I spent there. The strongest event that ever I experienced in my short existence. And to view those 160 men, together with 120 oxen and carts, all passing along to a destination in the far northwest, where the red man goes prowling about all hours, waiting when an innocent white may fall into their power to shed his blood and feast upon his flesh. Well might the waysiders say, raving and mad were those travelers. But we felt proud to know that we were the first on the way to push our way over the mountains to the far-famed gold region called Caribou. As the day was hot, when we arrived at Sturgeon Creek, we pitched our tents and camped for the night. All hands up and on duty in good season, we struck off to our right onto the plains, leaving the river to our left, and many a strange scene during the day. Oxen running off with their drivers, never failing to rid themselves of their entire tackling, some breaking carts, some harness, and some one thing and some another, as many as 6 and 8 in one of those rearing, tearing fits. Once we passed the herds of cattle, and the more impudent boys took the liberty of drawing 3, 4 quarts of milk from some of the cows. At 8 p.m., we arrived at Old Fort on White Horse Plain. We passed a number of small lakes. They were all alky water, and consequently could not be used. At 6 p.m., arrived at Long Lake, and as that was the first time for any of us to ever experience any great want of water, we knew the good of it when we got it. Held a mass meeting to try and get organized. The meeting was called to order. Mr. McMicking in the chair sat upon a water cask. Mr. Wallace Sectreds sat upon the ground. At 9 a.m., we came to Portage Fort on the Assiniboine. That was the end of the settlement westward, the end of oak-timbered land. We laid in a stock of wheel fellows, spokes, and axle trees. At 7 a.m., we struck into the long wood, very low and wet all the way, mud to the wheel hubs. This was the first of muck and mire for the counter-hopers and fun for the clod-hoppers. As soon as the tents up, some 4 or 5 of us made ourselves useful introducing ourselves into the mysteries of that part of domestic life which the fair sex charge with having destroyed their sweet and lovely tempers, that is, washing. All hands slept late and breakfasted at 9 a.m., everyone very still and quiet. Shoal Lake. This was living with the kinds of freshwater fish and the country around of the very best quality. After supper, some went fishing, some shooting, others playing different kinds of brass instruments, clarinets, flutes, violins, and a concertina. Some were gathered together singing as merrily and pleasant as though we had been in some grand concert hall of the first fashion of modern times in an eastern city. At 5 p.m., arrived at Rapid River. After fording it, we pitched our tents. That valley is as beautiful as any that I have ever laid eyes upon. The surface smooth as any carpet, thickly covered with wild roses and wild peas just in full bloom. Where the wild rose and pea in abundance does bud and blossom and fade away. Have arrived at the country where the Blackfeet and Cree Indians were at war with each other. Their custom is to fight by stratagem and treachery. We did not know what moment we might be surprised, supposing us to be their enemies or wanting their supplies. At Fort Ellis, we split off from the main body, the reason being the delay of certain parties who knew nothing about cart and cattle or anything else, save standing and looking at others working, which will be of no benefit to a man when his ox and cart is stuck fast in the mud. At 3 p.m., observed some red deer off to our left. And shortly after, we saw two Indians on horseback. And shortly after, saw a number of Indians on foot. And as the guide was gone, and no one to speak Indian, we pushed on as fast as we could. By this time, it had become a noted fact that those who were at the head of the train had a decided advantage over those who were at the rear, because when the first half of the train had passed over a mud hole, it was almost impossible for the remainder to get through. And as those who were not ready on the minute lost their place, it caused many a good laugh to see a whole battalion running with cups of tea and pancakes in their hands, eating as they went along, setting the whole company in such a fit of laughter that half lost their places. And then came a general consternation, some running with a tent, some with pails full of dishes. Sunday. All hands slept late and got breakfast at 10 a.m. The more sober-minded retire to read their Bible and meditate on their lives as well as other things. And here let me make a statement which seems strange to us all. Notwithstanding we had been 2 months from home, traveling over a lonely, wild, and desolate country, yet it seemed we were but a day's travel from home, and all that we had left behind. Nothing but a sharp recollection of what we had passed through could make us feel and realize our true position. Placed as we were in the wilds of Western British America, exiled as we were from home and all that was dear, as well as from all the arts and all the sciences of the day, with nothing left for us to admire but the vast open plains around us. Our minds had nothing left to feast upon but hope and imagination. At 5 p.m. we got dinner.